You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Become a subscriber and support Radical Radio. Call 03-9419-8377 or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Satellite from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano. And if you're wondering what anarchy is about, no, it's not chaos and hopelessness and inequality. Anarchos without rulers is a very simple political ideology, philosophy, whatever you like to call it, based on the creation of society without rulers. Why without rulers? I didn't mention the word rules, did I? I said without rulers. Because it's inequalities in power and wealth which create most of the problems that we see today, whether it's at a personal level, community level, national level, international level. It's those growing inequalities in power and wealth which see tens of thousands of people sacrificed, you know, on the capitalist killing fields. All right, let's move on. Now, the program is podcast. I understand we're up to date for our podcast. Hopefully we are. And you can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. As today is the 1st of May. Now, obviously, some people listen to this program on a podcast, and it won't be the 1st of May when they listen to the podcast. And many radio stations, community radio stations around Australia, broadcast segments of the Anarchist World This Week, or the whole program at different times and different days. But I'm broadcasting on May Day, the 1st of May. And what I'd like to do, just to give a little bit of respect and maybe share a bit of knowledge about May Day, the facts. There are a bit of confusions and myths regarding May Day, and I'd just like to look at the history of May Day in Melbourne and link it, obviously, to the international movement and make some comments regarding the differences between the 8-hour day movement historically and the May Day movement. May Day, the facts. The history of May Day, both internationally and in Australia, is interlinked with the history of the anarchist movement in this country. In 1884, that's right, a long time ago, almost, well, it's 140 years exactly to the date. In 1884, at a conference of the Federated Trades and Labour Unions of the United States and Canada in the United States, the conference decided to launch an intensive campaign for an 8-hour working day, because obviously most workers in the world work much longer than 8 hours, especially in the late 19th century. People who were not tradespeople. Many tradespeople in Australia had won the 8-hour day, but it was still a 6-day week, you know, a few decades before. But it was not till the 1880s that semi-skilled and non-skilled workers began to agitate for a shorter working day. So they decided to launch an intensive campaign for an 8-hour working day that would show that would result that's the word I'm looking for, result in widespread struggles on the 1st of May, 1886, two-year organisational time. Now, that's the thing about when you organise things. You don't organise it today for tomorrow unless it's some type of emergency. You need to build up. Demonstrations were held across the United States and Canada, and on the 1st of May, 1886, in Chicago, over 30,000 workers went on strike and over 80,000 took part in demonstrations to mark the struggle for the eight-hour day. 2 days later, on the 3rd of May, striking workers met outside the McCormick Harvesting Machine Company. Chicago police fired on the workers, killing four and wounding many others. Chicago anarchists organised a protest meeting at Haymarket Square in Chicago for the next evening. The rally was non-violent. As the rally was breaking up, and when it was breaking up, there was only about 200 people left, police charged the demonstrators. Someone threw a bomb at the police lines, killing one police officer. The police panicked, firing indiscriminately into the crowd and at each other. Seven police and four demonstrators were killed, and over 100 police and demonstrators were wounded. That's out of a group of less than two, around 200. Eight prominent anarchists were rounded up and charged with conspiracy to commit murder. I like that. It's always conspiracy when they really got no evidence, isn't it? Conspiracy to commit murder. Although only three of the eight that were charged, Albert Parsons, August Spies, and Samuel Fielden, had spoken at the rally. All eight, Albert Parsons, August Spies, Samuel Fielden, Michael Schwab, Oscar Nieb, George Engel, Adolf Fischer, and Louis Ling, were found guilty. That's right. Seven were sentenced to death, and one, Oscar Niebe, to 15 years imprisonment. August Spies, George Engel, Adolf Fischer, and Albert Parsons were hanged on the 11th of November, 1887. Louis Ling committed suicide the night before, and Fielden and Schwab's sentences were commuted to life in prison. All eight men were victims of the widespread hysteria whipped up by the yellow Chicago press. It was later proven all eight men had nothing to do with the bombing, and those executed and those imprisoned received a full pardon. Now, if you do go to Chicago, I recommend you do go find Haymarket Square. It's still there as a memorial. So remember, they were all received a full pardon, like Lindy Chamberlain received a full pardon. Full pardon. But five were hung, one committed suicide. In Australia, to bring the matter back to this country, on the 1st of May 1886, brothers David and William Andre, who ran a news agent in Sydney Road, Brunswick, as you'd expect, heeded the call of the Federated Trades and Labour Unions of the United States and Canada and launched the Melbourne Anarchist Club, Australia's first anarchist organisation. 3 years later, on the 14th of July 1889, the International Labour Conference, the Second Internationale, decided to make the 1st of May a great day of international demonstration. And that's where you have that division between Labor Day and May Day. Labor Day was about the eight-hour day. May Day is about radical change. An Australian delegate, John Norton, from the Sydney Trade Union Movement, attended the conference on behalf of the Australian movement. The members of the Melbourne Anarchist Club celebrated the 1st of May 1887 and 1888 with a number of public meetings and lectures. May Day was celebrated in Victoria in the offices of Dr. William Maloney, who later became the radical member for the federal seat of Melbourne in 1890 and 1891. When he was elected by the people of Melbourne, there was consternation among the rich and powerful, decrying what had happened. But if you look up Dr. William Maloney, you'll see a little bit of a stories about his time in Parliament. Now, the first Australian May Day celebration and demonstration were held in Barcaldine and Ipswich at the height of the shearers' strike in 1891. The shearers' strike was a failed strike in 1891, which led to the creation of the Australian Labor Party. Over 1,000 people took part. 600 shearers were mounted on horseback. The procession was led by 4 strike leaders who'd been jailed, who were wearing blue sashes. The Odd Fellows Band, now you may find that unusual, the Odd Fellows Band. Well, you've got to understand that the Odd Fellows Society, or Mutual Providence Society, existed till about the 1980s. And there were many mutual societies which were set up by workers who paid a small amount every week to look after them and their families during times of crisis, especially medical crisis, because obviously there was no free healthcare that period. So the Odd Fellows Band was followed by the banner of the Australian Labor Federation. The Eureka Flag was carried by some participants during the first May Day march in Barcaldine. In 1893, moves were made in Queensland to have the 8-hour day celebrated on the 1st of May instead of March. Now, it's interesting in Australia when you look at what's happening today. In Queensland, there is a public holiday for May Day. In the Northern Territory, there is a public holiday for May Day, and there will be important celebrations. But in the rest of Australia, there are no public holidays for May Day. And even the traditional Labor March, Labor Day March, which was held, I think, in March initially, which attracted 80 to 100,000 workers every year was subverted by the state, especially the Victorian state government, when they created the Moomba Festival to cleanse the street of May Day activists. And there is an interesting little story to the Moomba Festival. Now, I've forgotten his first name, but Mr. Onus was a First Nations, Victorian First Nations individual who worked with the Trades Hall in Melbourne. And as they were looking for something a bit exotic, the Balti government bureaucrats approached him for a name for this festival, which continues today. And he said Moomba, which in his traditional language means up your bum. Right. Let's move on. In 1892, a public celebration was held at the Yarra Bank in Melbourne to mark May Day. The meeting was chaired by well-known Melbourne anarchist Chummy Fleming. And as I said at the beginning of the program, if you are in Melbourne today, midday we'll be meeting at Chummy Lane, which is the only street, lane, whatever, that I know that's been named after an anarchist in this country. The meeting was preceded by a march which began at the Burke and Wills Monument, which was led by men carrying 2 huge red flags. In 1893, Chummy Fleming called a meeting of radical delegates from across Melbourne to organise future May Day celebrations. Chummy Fleming was involved in every May Day celebration in Melbourne until his death in 1950. His ashes, or what are purported to be his ashes, were scattered on the Yarra Bank on May Day the following year, that's 1851. Chummy Place in Carlton was named to honour him. There's an interesting story regarding Chummy Place, and if you go there today or at any time, you know, you'll find it behind a 7-Eleven store. Well, Chummy Fleming was what you'd call a serial pest, right, as far as the ruling classes were concerned. He was a courageous, he was a bootmaker, he was a radical, he was an anarchist. And in the early 1900s, while Lord Hopetoun, who was Australia's first Governor-General, was in his little coach crossing the Princes Bridge in Melbourne, you know, next to Federation Square and the station, Flinders Street Station, he jumped on the running board of the carriage and began a discussion with the Governor-General, Lord Hopetoun, regarding the plight of the poor. Now, Lord Hopetoun had his own problems with the Australian government. He actually resigned a few years later as Governor-General. And they struck up a friendship. And it seems that Lord Hopetoun lent Chummy money to build a house at 6 Argyle Crescent in Carlton, which is across the road from a boot repair shop. He was a bootmaker. So the story goes that, well, it's not a story, it's a fact. When Lord Hopetoun, the Governor-General, because remember at that stage the Parliament House was in Melbourne, resigned, he provided Chummy with some money and 36 bottles of French champagne from his personal cellar to be spread, to be given to the poor in Melbourne. So you could imagine what happened. Thousands of people flocked to Chummy's bootmaker's shop in Lygon Street to partake of the three champagne and a few cases of beer. So if you are coming on the walk, it won't be a vicious pace. We're in no hurry. I'll look at a lot of interesting things. But the important thing is May Day is important. It's important because it highlights what people can do collectively. As individuals, we can do very little. But we can do a lot of things collectively. And May Day highlights that if people want to improve their situation, they need to work collectively. Unfortunately, in Australia, in 2024, a whole series of legislation has been passed which almost criminalises workplace activity. You can be jailed for up to 25 years for taking part in an occupation. You can be fined for $10,000 a day, that's the individual worker, for taking, whether unionised or non-unionised, for taking part in a wildcat strike. So what is a wildcat strike? In this country, I know you find it hard to believe, is this type of stuff, you know, they talk about in Russia and North Korea and China and Iraq and all those places. Well, in this country, it is illegal to strike outside an enterprise bargaining agreement period. And even during that period, you've got to jump for about 64 hoops before you can remove your labour for 2 hours. So in many regards, the individual contracts we have today, the lack of interest in the trade union movement, the exploitation, the increasing number of working poor in this country, the increased financial burden, which is shouldered by many people on social security benefits and in the paid workforce because of part-time work, exploitation. This is the type of thing, you know, we saw in the 19th century. So in many regards, there are parallels between the 19th century and the 21st century. Think about it. Have a good May Day. Irrespective of where you are in Australia, celebrate the day. Remember, if we didn't have workers coming together to improve their situation, or people, communities coming together to improve their situation, which still have four-year-olds working in coal mines. And if you think I'm kidding, just look what the deregulation, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation revolution has delivered to these to us. I'll give you an example, simple example. Bonza, not so Bonza. Now, Bonza Airline was a little regional airline, right? Privately owned. Competing against the big, you know, the big two. Now, see, what we've forgotten is that Bonza's problems, it's not just a matter of leasing planes, were directly related to the privatisation mania which gripped the airline industry in the 1990s. Not only was the publicly owned airline Qantas privatised, what actually happened is that the airports were privatised. So now we have superannuation, you know, companies or private organisations, just a few, owning all the airports in Australia. They have a virtual monopoly, because this is what happens with privatisation. You create a virtual private monopoly. And when you've got a virtual private, well, when you've got a, not a virtual, when you've got a real private monopoly, what it means is you can set any price you like. And there is no way a small airline is going to survive in this country while the sector remains in private hands, especially the very airports which are fundamental to any type of competition in the airline, in the airplane industry. So, you know, we need to put the join the dots, because things don't just happen. All right, let's move on to something a little bit more substance. Now, how many of you have been to Albury? How many of you have been to Warrnambool? How many of you have been to Tamworth or even Dubbo? Yeah, nice towns, aren't they? Good for a day trip, maybe. Maybe good for a bit of a holiday, jumping off place to see things, you know. We're all familiar with these places, aren't we? Now, how would you feel? How would you feel? You're in your little bicycle or in your electric car or your gas guzzler like I have, and you turn up at Albury or Tamworth, you know, or Warrnambool or Gladstone in Queensland, and the place is devastated. Almost every building has been bombed to smithereens, and every man, woman and child in that town, regional town, is dead. Because that's Gaza. I mean, it's difficult to envisage 34,000 people being killed in the vengeance which the Israeli state is wreaking on the Palestinian people for the actions of their government, which was the Hamas government in Gaza. Because what we need to do in this situation is to put a human face to what's happening. Now, I talk about taking a little walk every day, and that little walk, as we pass every metre, a man, woman and child, mainly women and children, who have been killed in the violence, has now grown to 34 kilometres. That's a long walk. It'll take you a long time to walk 34 kilometres. But I think a more fitting analogy is the analogy of these regional towns being totally levelled and the population being killed. It's a little bit like Shepparton, Maroopna. Population of over 50,000, near 46, 47,000. You know, 80% dead, 20% living in the ruins. I mean, I know people are talking about the International Criminal Court handing down warrants, but let's not forget that the United States believes that the International Criminal Court has no jurisdiction in Gaza. Well, it does have a jurisdiction in Gaza, because the Palestinian people have asked it to have jurisdiction. It doesn't have jurisdiction in the United States, and it doesn't have jurisdiction in Israel. Now, although, you know, people can be slapped with charges, it's almost impossible to make them stick, as we've seen with Mr. Putin. So the reality is that in 2024, despite all the innovations we have, technological innovations, despite all the knowledge we have, we still see people accepting state-sponsored terrorism as a solution to political problems. Not negotiations, but state-sponsored terrorism. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week. broadcast on the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Now, I'm not ignoring the 1,200 Israelis who were killed and the almost 150 who were held hostage, and about 100 still alive who are held hostage. But what I'm talking about is this type of indiscriminate state-sponsored terrorism, which is accepted as the norm in this society because of the inequalities we have. Let's move on. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. Horrific. It's a nice word, isn't it? Horrific. Horrific. You choose. Now, some days I really despair about where I'm living, what planet I'm living on. Now, I saw the... I didn't see him personally, you know, an image of the Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, you know, complain about how horrific, that was his words, not mine, how horrific it was to see students on United States campus and now on Australian campuses, but he was describing the students holding occupations to highlight the carnage which is occurring in Gaza. It's not a war, it's carnage. Let's get that right. He felt it was horrific to see people peacefully protesting on campus. Just horrendous. Horrendous. Horrific. At the same time, he is the head of a government which has used more than excessive force, is also using mass starvation as a weapon, not to free the hostages, the Israeli hostages, but to wreak vengeance on the Palestinians in Gaza who stood up to the Israeli state. So what's horrific? Is it a horrific that after a bombing, which is supposedly, you know, targeting a Hamas militant, 18 children out of 20 casualties, 18 are children? Is it horrific if there are body bags full of bodies under hospitals? Is it horrific? One of the largest number of people dying in this conflict are children. And let's not forget, 7 months later, it's not just about those who are dying in the conflict. It's about the damage that is occurring to the Palestinians in Gaza because, you see, what the Israeli state, led by Mr. Netanyahu and his cabinet, have forgotten is they are the best advertisement for Hamas. They may be able to clean out Hamas from Gaza, but they are not going to stop that struggle for self-determination. But just extraordinary when you think about it. This is the most violent, this is the most concentrated violence we've seen in the 21st century. I mean, the Ukrainian situation is horrific. But although that war has been going on for over 2 years, the casualties in Ukraine are actually less than what's happened in Gaza in the last 7 months. Let's move on. Gender inequality, racial inequality, generational inequality. Respect. Obviously, we've seen a spike, a significant spike, in the number of women who've been murdered in the majority of cases by intimate partners or people they know. Children murdering mothers, lovers murdering lovers. And you think to yourself, you know, people use the right terminology, don't they? Respect gender inequality. Well, I think we need to look at this in a wider context. It's a difficult thing to talk about, but we need to look at it in a wider context because there is inequality. There is growing inequality in this country. It's not just about gender inequality. It's about racial inequality. It's about generational inequality. There is a subcurrent of violence, whether it's in terms of youth crime or whether it's in terms of other types of criminal activity by older people. There is this undercurrent of violence. You see it on the roads. You see it with people's impatience. You see it in terms of people's suppressed anger. It's there. And it's growing. And it manifests itself in a number of ways. This isn't to, exonerate the people who are involved in that violence, but it's trying to look at why things happen. Because, see, in medicine, in order to treat something, you need to make a diagnosis. You can treat the symptoms, but you need to make a diagnosis. Why is this happening? Now, we need to extend the debate beyond respect and gender inequality. We need to look at all those contributing factors which are increasing psychological difficulties in our community. And let's not forget, we are one of the most medicated societies in the world in terms of antidepressants, in terms of anti-psychotic medications. So let's look at things that very few people want to speak about because it doesn't fit into that, disrespect gender inequality equation. Social media. Now, ultimately, social media is about getting your eyeballs on advertisements which make money for the owners of these platforms. That's what it's about. How they get your eyeballs onto those advertisements doesn't concern them. And the increase in portrayal of misogyny and violent pornography, which is easily accessible to people, must have an impact on the way people develop. And the fact that they see the use of violence as the only solution to the situation they find themselves in. So that's about money, social media. Let's look at the next thing is gambling. Now, obviously, and I'm one of them, people gamble. But it can be a little bit of entertainment, you win a bit of excitement, blah, blah, blah. But there are significant sections of the population which have huge issues with gambling. Now, gambling does not just affect the individual. When it gets out of control, it affects the people around that individual, whether it's children, whether it's partners, whether it's family. And the gambling industry, once again, is based on the idea of making a buck. And the state gets its buck through taxation. So once again, here we have the promotion of gambling in the community, which causes a lot of harm, which is then extrapolated into interpersonal relationships and violent, reactions in those interpersonal relationships. It has a profound impact. Let's move to alcohol. Australia's favourite poison in the good old days, not today. Alcohol has devastating consequences. Again, not just on the individual, but on the people around that individual. And it's quite likely that when inhibitions have been decreased through the use of alcohol, that violence becomes a mechanism by which people try to maintain control in the situation they find themselves in. The alcohol industry, what's it based on? A profit motive. And if, and the state gets its share, you know, quite a reasonable share. From the, then we've got illegal drugs. Now, there are many illegal drugs. Now, a lot of people say, oh, I take this and I'm in full control. Fair enough. But again, not everybody is in full control. And if you find yourself in this addictive patterns, where you're in an addictive situation, you will, not in all cases, but in some cases, revert to violence in order to feed your habit. And once again, it's not about the state getting its cut this time. It's about the private sector, the criminal underworld, which is the private sector. I mean, the drug business is about making a buck, making a quick buck, in irrespective of the harm to the community. So you've got to look at all these things. It's one thing saying, right, we've got somebody who's a potential offender, we're going to put a ankle bracelet on them, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to get the police to become involved, and let's not forget the police response to domestic violence now is about 30 to 40% of their work across the country. But the thing is that you've got to look at all these other contributing factors, and if you don't, it doesn't matter how many nice words you use, things won't change. There's no point going up to somebody who's got an alcohol problem or a drug problem or a gambling problem or a social media, you know, is being influenced by social media, and saying, oh, how about a bit of respect? How about this? How about that? How about gender inequality? They'll just laugh at you. And the fact is, the gender inequality is an interesting concept, because there are, the great thing about capitalism, it doesn't really care ultimately the colour of your skin or your gender or, you know, what you identify as and your sexual orientation. Capitalism is about making a buck. If they can make a buck out of you, they're not interested in the consequences of their drive to make a buck. I mean, that's the beauty about social media. No responsibility, not asked to pick up after themselves. Could you imagine if the gambling industry and the alcohol industry and social media were asked to pay, yeah, in cash, good hard cash, that's all, or a cryptocurrency these days, were asked to pay for the harm they cause in the community? Could you imagine the outcry? But look, if I went out there and, you know, I did something bad, well, I'd have to pay for it if I was caught, wouldn't I? But these organisations are protected by the state through legislation, and they've got no responsibility. They expect us, the taxpayer, or the citizens, or the permanent residents, to take up, you know, to pay for their excesses so their owners can continue to make extraordinary profits at the expense of everybody. What an extraordinary society we live in. What an extraordinary society. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, I'd like to look at belief systems versus reality. If I told you that I believe that I can fly, not an aeroplane, especially not in a Bonza plane, because they're not flying currently. I told you I could fly. And I went to the edge of a cliff and jumped. Would I fly horizontally? No, I'd fall. The reality is we have gravity on the planet. That's the reality. There is gravity on the planet. It's a little bit like climate change or the climate emergency, whatever you like to call it. A lot of people still think it's just a lot of garbage. You know, they have a belief system that it's some type of political correctness, you know? That it's a, you know, something to, you know, it doesn't really exist, does it? Climate change doesn't exist. But then around us we begin to see the consequences of increasing greenhouse emissions. For example, currently members of Torres Strait Islanders have taken the Australian government to the High Court because their islands are disappearing under increasing sea levels, which directly relate to the type of, you know, society we've become in terms of the type of manufacturing we do. So rising sea levels are a reality. Cyclones, increasing cyclones are a reality. Obviously, you got beautiful days, but when you add it all up, there seems to be more disasters. And as there's more people on the planet, over 8 billion, concentrated basically in urban centres, 70% of the world's population, that's 7 out of 10 people, now live in large metropolises, large urban centres. So I can believe anything I like. I can believe there's an old bloke in the sky that looks like me who gives people eternal salvation. But I actually haven't come across anybody who's come back to tell me they're living with the old bloke in the sky. I can believe that God speaks to me. Well, in the good old days, if you believe God spoke to you, you became a religious leader and founded a new religion. Today, they put a straitjacket on you and chemically restrain you because, you know, you're having hallucinations. And you know, I know people who believe that COVID-19 doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. It's all made up, you know. The reality is a bit different when you catch it. So belief in reality, it's interesting how in the 21st century, in an era where we should be much more familiar with the concept of reality, we've gone back to the Dark Ages where belief systems ruled us. I know, it used to be believed that tomatoes were aphrodisiacs and the church banned them. And if you had a tomato in your possession, you could be burnt at the stake. People used to believe the earth was flat, and a few people still do. But because you believe the earth is flat, does that make it flat? Was the age of reason for nothing? Have we gone back to a society through social media where any belief system can have its followers has begun to dominate our reality? Because the thing about reality, it doesn't care. It doesn't care whether you believe in God. It doesn't care whether you believe in COVID-19. It doesn't care whether you believe in the climate emergency or don't believe in the climate emergency. It just does not care. Reality is a great leveller. And I think we need to be very, very honest with ourselves regarding what we consider to be our belief systems, because being all tied up in a particular belief system that has no basis in reality is the very thing that those who maintain power, the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and the communication, want us to be involved in. It means we fight amongst each other and they brush a few crumbs off the corporate table in our direction, then we fight for the crumbs that have fallen on the ground. Quite an extraordinary situation, isn't it, in 2024, that belief overrides reality. Maybe belief overrides reality because reality is not very nice for a lot of people. So what is reality in 21st century Australia? What is reality? Reality is, and because it's made, I'll go down this pathway, we belong in a de-unionised society. The reality is that the privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation, deregulation tsunami that has swept over us has created duopolies and monopolies which exploit us. viciously every day. The reality is that most of us are in debt. Whether it's a debt related to paying rent, or whether it's a debt related to a mortgage, or whether it's a debt related to a financial loan, that's the reality. For example, you just heard, I think you've heard in the last few days, that Australians lost $2.5 billion to scammers. Well, you see, governments in this country are so piss weak because there are so many monopolies in various areas, including the banking sector, where you've got four major players, that they never pass legislation to protect the consumer. For example, if you're ripped off in a scam and the bank is part of that, shouldn't they refund your money to you automatically, as happens in England, where legislation has been passed to compensate people where the bank hasn't done due diligence in terms of the transactions which have occurred? Oh, no, not in this country. We just allow the banking sector to continue ad nauseum, without. And remember the Royal Commission 7 years ago? Was anybody charged? Was any CEO found themselves in court? Did any little banking bureaucrat find themselves in court? Of course not. Nobody found themselves in court, and nobody ever will. It looks like they're too big to fail. And see, this is the price we are now paying for the last 40 years. The thing is, we can change. We can change. I wouldn't be here week after week after week if I didn't think change was possible. Hope is a word which is, used constantly. Hope, hope, hope. Hope this, hope. What's hope? To me, hope is the love child of desire and expectation. The desire for change and the expectation that change will occur. One goes with the other. You can't have either or. You've got to have both. The desire for change and the expectation that change will occur. The thing about May Day is what it does, it highlights the role history plays in everyday life. And that's why his story and her story is important. It's not just about remembering the past and doffing our hats and saying what good people they were or what bad people they were. History looks at our soul. It looks at where we've come from, what we're doing. For example, as far as First Nations people are concerned in this country, they're beginning to pry open the Pandora, the box in which our history of colonisation has been kept away from generations. So reality is fundamental to the way we live. And if we believe the propaganda, and it is nothing more than propaganda, that private is good, public is bad, well then, issues. For example, I've been involved in an organisation called Public Interest Before Corporate Interest now, since established in 2015. And we have never been in a position where we have been able to influence debate in terms of the role that the private and public sector play in Australia. We've never reached that. We're having a Congress this Saturday starting at 3 p.m. at the Unitarian Church in Melbourne. That's a Grey Street, Melbourne, and obviously observers are welcome. Obviously the Congress is for public interest before corporate interest members. And one of the biggest difficulties we've had is to actually explain what the public is. See, the public is us as a group, as a community. We are the public. The corporate sector is them, an insignificant minority with extraordinary power, the power to influence parliamentary legislation. And that's why every day of every week, of every month, of every year, of every decade, of every century, it's the same story. There's not enough money for this. There's not enough money for health. There's not enough money for public education. There's not enough money regarding domestic violence. There's never enough money to compensate First Nations people for the lands that were stolen. There's never enough money for anything. Because, see, what's happened in the last 40 years is just fascinating. Well, sad, really. 40 years ago, if you invested in something, right, in a business, and it made a profit, not all investors make profits, but many do, 66% or 66 cents in the dollar would go to the worker who created that profit, and 33 cents would go to the investor. Today, when we're all aspirational, we all, aspire to become part of the investment class. The 8% of Australians have got disposable income to, advance their interests in society. As we aspire, we've forgotten. We have forgotten that change is possible. We are so burdened with debt, with anxiety, with perennial issues of inequality, whether it's gender, whether it's racial, whether it's generational. We are so burdened by a parliamentary system that no longer represents our interest or never represented our interest that we find ourselves in this situation in 2024. But change is possible, and May Day is one of those days that highlights that change is possible. But the key word is the C word, collective action. Mutual aid, collective action, coming together to advance your interests and the interests of the people around you. As an individual, I could speak here till the cows come home, and I do, because the sacred cows will be back in the studio in a minute. But the reality is, what I say has minimal, if any, impact on anybody. The reality is that when we come together and we speak the same language in terms of the desire and the expectation that change will occur, then change does occur. And that's what we need to think about. And that's why I'm encouraging you to get involved in as many debates and issues and organisations that you can, because ultimately it's our inability to think that change is possible that ensures that we continue to repeat the mistakes of the past. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. If you want to leave messages, 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. Those of you who are interested in taking part in the May Day walk through Melbourne, where I look at significant anarchist sites, 19th century anarchist sites, and try to incorporate those sites in 21st century struggle, we'll be meeting at Chummy Place, which is in Argyle Street in Carlton at midday. So I better get out of this studio pretty quickly. Yes, you can write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can email me at anarchistage@yahoo.com or info@pibci.net. I encourage you to look at the Public Interest Before Corporate Interest website. Go to pibci.net. You can join online. That's how easy it is. There's no charge to join. You can join online and become part of that push to put the interests of the many, that's the public, before the interests of the few, that's the corporate sector. Ultimately, change depends on your involvement for that change. Now, hopefully I'll see many PIBSI members at the Congress this Saturday at the Unitarian Church, starting at 3 p.m. That's the 4th of May. That's this Saturday. Let's get that right. I hope I didn't say Sunday. This Saturday the 4th of May, 3 p.m. It'll go to 8 p.m. And if you're coming, There are cooking facilities. I was asked that by Michael, and unfortunately I never got back to him. But there are cooking facilities. Bring food so we can have a share a meal at the end of the Congress. Go to the website, pibsy.net. Don't forget, YouTube channels, public interest before corporate interests, josephtoscano.com. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. This program has been brought to you courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is heard on community radio stations across the country. Listen in to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station next week.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week. Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.